Rick Barry joining us on Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Our lists are taking shape. Rick Barry, you have been voted by the listeners one of the 10 greatest Bay Area athletes of all time. And what I love about you is you probably knew that before we took the vote. How are you, Rick?
Well, I'm doing fine. And no, I actually didn't know that. Never even thought about it, to be perfectly honest. But it's certainly a nice honor. Thank you to the fans for their votes. And you guys sound like a law firm with those three names.
You would not want to hire us if you were in trouble. That's for sure. Rick, looking back at your career, some of the numbers are just jaw-dropping. For those who were too young to have watched you play, what's the one thing you would like the next generation of basketball fans to know about your career?
Well, just that every time I put my uniform on, you got everything that I had. My dad always taught me to take great pride in everything that I do and to always give your best effort. And I can honestly say that there's only one game in my entire career that I ever played that I mentally was not in the game. And I was so mad at myself at the end of the first quarter that if I could have kicked myself in the ass, I would have done it. I mean, that's, you know, I just went out there and I gave everything I had every time that uniform went on. And first of all, I think you owe that to yourself. It's important that you never let yourself down in life. But then I owed it to my teammates. I owed it to the coach. I owed it to the owner of the team. I owed it to the fans. And that's the way you should approach it, especially, you know, when you're getting paid to do it. Hell, I did that when I wasn't getting paid, when I was playing basketball growing up.
In your career, which, you know, was largely greatness interrupted by a year and a half in sort of weird ABA limbo, what was the best time you ever had, and what was the worst time?
Well, the worst time was when I got hurt, not knowing whether or not I'd ever be able to play again. My first knee injury, back before they had arthroscopic surgery. I mean, I still suffer with a knee because I had two operations without arthroscopic surgery, and I have a, you know, bad arthritic knee. But unfortunately, I was able to play an extended career despite that fact. And the best, without question, is winning the championship, the 75 Warriors, and the greatest upset in the history of the NBA Finals that's gotten the least recognition. I mean, I keep watching all these documentaries going on TV now about stuff that isn't anywhere near the accomplishment that was made by our basketball team. We didn't get invited to the White House. We didn't get in the cover of Sports Illustrated. They've never done a documentary about the greatest upset in the history of the NBA. It was supposed to be a joke, 4-0 sweep by a team, and we wound up sweeping them, a team that wasn't even supposed to make the playoffs. I think my teammates got shortchanged. It wouldn't have happened without them. I didn't do it by myself. And if anything, Clifford Ray was the most important person on the team. And what we accomplished was truly remarkable, and yet we got no recognition for it whatsoever. And I feel sorry for those guys. So I was at least given the opportunity to, you know, get the MVP of the championship series and receive some recognition for that. But the team itself was overlooked. And that's just a sad thing.
Do you have thoughts on why? Because, I mean, the elevator pitch you just gave is a pretty good one for that sports documentary, but it hasn't happened. And even just growing up hearing about the great NBA upsets, it's really not something that is talked about all that much anymore. Do you have a thought on why?
I don't know why. I mean, I have no idea why. I mean, it speaks for itself, you know, what was happening. Maybe because of the fact that back in, though, it's such a difference in the NBA now. I mean, our finals were on delayed television. So it wasn't like it got a lot of recognition even back when it was really happening. That's the incredible part of it. It just shows you how things have changed. It's just a different world now. The publicity that's out there, the recognition these guys get on an international basis, the game has become internationally famous. It wasn't that way back when we played. Everything was different for the players. I mean, hell, we had to wash our own uniforms in the shower after games and hope that it dried out for the game the next night flying commercial. So it's a totally different world. And the worst part about it, I guess, is that, you know, they forgot 3 zeros on my contract for sure.
Going back to that team, Rick, what was it about that group that you think made it possible for you to pull off the biggest upset in NBA history?
Well, it was because we, on our rings, we have the word togetherness. And we really became like a family. And a lot of that credit has to go, I think, I always joke about it with Al Addles, who was my roommate as a rookie and teammate, and then, of course, was our coach on the championship team. I said the two greatest coaching moves that Al Addles ever made was, number one, bringing in a gentleman by the name of Bud Presley, who was the coach at Menlo Atherton College. He came into training camp, and he talked to us about the commitment to defense, and you're going to win if you all pull together and you all make a total commitment to being the best defensive team you can be. And we did that. And I still remember his demonstration and what he talked about. He had Clifford Ray run full speed at him, coming down the court, jumped in front of him, and I thought Clifford was going to have killed him. He knocked him over. He did like two or three somersaults. He was a heavy smoker, and I thought Clifford really had hurt him. And I just remember that everybody got taken by that. We took great pride in our defense, and we were one of the best rebounding, if not the best rebounding team in the league that year, and we weren't a big physical team. And I think that was set the foundation and all, and was the catalyst for us going out there and getting it done. And then we all went out and played together. We played unselfishly. And then the second greatest move was for Clifford, was other than Clifford Ray being the hub of the team, because he brought everybody together. And I heard that he had a meeting with all the players without me there. I didn't learn about that till later. And to this day, we're really like brothers and do a lot of stuff together. But then Al, in the finals of the Western Conference, tell me how many coaches would take your best player out of the game midway through the third quarter in the championship of the Western Conference. I mean, how many coaches would do that? I was sticking up the joint. It was the best thing he could have done to get me out and let me try to regroup. I was ready to go back in at the end of the third quarter, but he still kept me on the bench. And our teammates, and Clifford was on the bench as well. He was a starting center. George Johnson was the backup. He was out there blocking everything, doing a great job. My teammates held the Chicago Bulls scoreless for 7.5 minutes to get us back into the game. And then thank God when Al put me back in. You know, I knew that I was already back then. The GOAT was not the greatest of all time. You were the GOAT. That means you sucked, and you were the reason why the team lost. And I knew I had nowhere to go but up, because I was already at the lowest point I could possibly be. And fortunately, I played the way I should have been playing the whole game, and we wound up winning that game and going to the finals. So if Al hadn't made that move, I don't think we would have made it to the finals. So it was really an interesting team, a great team who we – I think all cared about one another, pulled together. We would go to the movies together, go out to dinner together. And it was the way that I always thought that basketball should be. I had it like that at different times in my career, but that never had a team like that in the pros.
Hall of Famer, 12-time All-Star Rick Barry joins us here on 95.7 The Game. The signature silhouette of your career is standing at a free throw line and you know, ready to shoot the underhanded granny free throws. When did that happen in your career? Were you ever an over the top of your head free throw shooter? When did that start for you?
Well, I did that all the time. I mean, you really can't shoot the way that I shot, the way my dad, who was a semi-pro player, got me to do it. He played and shot that way, and was a coach and player in the semi-pros. And I couldn't do it until he felt my hands were big enough to be able to hold the ball properly, because you have to hold your hands over the ball a little bit. So they have to be large enough to be able to do it to get the proper technique. And I just wish I had been smart enough. But my dad was relentless about it, and I really didn't want to do it, because back then that's the way girls shot, and then it was, you know, the granny shot. No, they called it the sissy shot back then. I remember the first time after when I made the change, one summer I said, "Dad, okay, let me do this." I did it mainly to get him off my back. He was driving me nuts. And so I went and did it as I started to practice. And again, giving it my best effort, I said, "Wow, this is actually pretty darn good." And so I worked really hard at it. I changed for that next season. I don't remember if it was my junior or senior year in high school. I remember the first game on the road. It was in Scotch Plains, New Jersey. And I remember it like it was yesterday. And I'm shooting later in the game, and this guy from the crowd is yelling out, "Hey, Barry, you make sissy shooting like that." And I heard so perfectly clear the guy next to him say, "Why are you making fun of him? He doesn't miss." And from that point on, I was cool, and I was good with him for the rest of the way. And then, unfortunately, I wasn't smart enough to have made the change that I made. In my end of my career, my last 6 years, I made a little bit of a change to the technique. And my last 6 years, which would be the best of all time, I shot over 92%. My last 2 years, I shot over 94%. I actually was better at the end of my career than I was at the start of my career. And had I shot that way back when I was shooting 12, 13 free throws a game, I could have put up some crazy numbers. I was always disappointed in myself that I didn't have the record for the most consecutive free throws in competition. I wanted to do 100 or more. I had the record for a long time at 60. But if I was shooting that other way, I think I might have been able to do it, because it's really difficult to shoot over 94% when you're only shooting two or three a game. You have to go, if you miss one, you got to go weeks without missing a free throw to get it back up to the 95 percentile. And I was able to do that because I took great pride in it. It's the only part of the game, really, where you can be selfish and help your team. And so that's what I focused on, and I did it. In fact, Andre Drummond from the Detroit Pistons about two or three seasons ago, 22 free throws in one game. I only missed 19 in my seasons.